What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond.
Ain't got a can or a big automobile. I'm just a little guy, not a big tire wheel. But I can prove my love is true on my rocking bicycle that's built for two. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a stint, baby, me and you on my rocking bicycle that's built for two. We don't care, we don't mind. If we don't be in front, we'll be right behind. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and leave a circle for us. They can have a Cadillac and T-Bud too, but give me my rocking bicycle for two. Ain't got a Cadillac or a big automobile. I'm just a little guy, I'm not a big tire wheel. But I can prove my love is true on my rocking bicycle that's built for two. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make the scene, baby, me and you on my rocking bicycle that's built for two. We don't care, we don't mind. If we don't be in front, we'll be laugh at us. Let them take the bus and give the sequel to us. They can have the Cadillac and T-Bud too, but give me my rocking bicycle for two.
All right, welcome to Out There. It's Wednesday. Oh, stop, enough already. It's Wednesday, July 31st, and I'm so excited. I have my thumb drive back that's got my proper Out There intro with Fats Domino bringing it in with the rockin' bicycle. I had to go ahead and play the whole song in celebration. So my thumb drive for listeners, for loyal listeners who've listened to my show over the last couple of months, my thumb drive and other things had been in police custody. And so I just got them back last week, my bicycle and my thumb drives, my recorder, my radio show things. And today, now that I have my things back and my court case is sort of resolved, today I'll tell you the story. So I don't know how much of the show today that's going to take up. I actually had an interview conversation with my co-conspirator of this case, Gabor Lukacs. Sorry about your last name there, Gabor. And I had an interview with him that I'd hoped to play. But as often happens with me and my technological problems, the interview, when I tried to pull it off of the recorder, something goopy was in the recorder battery case. And I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but I couldn't get any data off the recorder. So we'll wing it as usual. So the story here, well, as listeners will know, or people in town may know, my name is Ruthie Woodring. I'm working on this summer project. I don't know, maybe it'll be a summer, fall, and winter project. I'm working on this project to ship a bunch of bikes to Trinidad, where I spent a bunch of the past winter, and I'm returning in the fall. So I've been on the hunt for bikes since May. I'd like to get around 400 to fill a shipping container. And I'm working with partners in Trinidad who are excited to receive, resell, redistribute them. Oh, yeah, I have a GoFundMe page, too. You can look up Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project GoFundMe. And that's got more information, too. So I'm trying to get some bikes, and at the Northampton Bike Breakfast during Bike Commute Day back in May, Bike Commute Week back in May, I made a little homemade sign that I had at Bike Breakfast letting all the cyclists know, send your unused bike to Trinidad. You can drop off your bike at 8 High Street in Florence, that's my house, or at 12 Northern Avenue in Northampton. That's the Bike Lab. So I'm looking for bikes, said the sign with my little map and osmosis diagram of bikes osmosing from the United States down to Trinidad. And so my friend Gabor, who was at the bike breakfast, he lives in Amherst, and he's familiar with the university there and what happens at the end of semester when students leave and they leave their bikes behind. And so he said, oh, yeah, you know, when they leave, the university will put up signs saying all bikes have to be removed by such and such date. But a lot of students don't take their bikes, and they're just left there. Maybe, you know, when the time comes, maybe we could get some bikes from there for your project. And I said, oh, great, great. Meanwhile, I had also gone by Smith College campus police asking them if they had any bikes left over. And they had told me that they had just given 70 of them to Bob the Bike Guy in Springfield, who does Pedal Through Youth. I had called UMass campus police as well and asked them about the bikes. And they said, oh, you have to talk to the evidence officer or some other officer. They're not in today, so call back next week. Well, I didn't actually chase that bureaucratic trail. I just tried to take a shortcut, shortcut that ended up being a very long cut with me and Gabor and the bolt cutters. Yes, we had some bolt cutters. And at the same time, I had also submitted a bid to get bikes, to buy some bikes from a Springfield Police Department bike auction. So, you know, I was trying all these different ways to get bikes. I'm still trying a bunch of different ways to get bikes, one by one or 4x4 or 50 at a time. Anyway, so back in May, about a week after bike breakfast, Gabor calls me and he says, hey, they put up the signs at UMass that say all bikes have to be removed by the 16th. If you want to go see, and you know, we can see what's left and see if there might be some good for your project. And I was like, okay, great. So I went over to Gabor as I biked over. It was a Wednesday. It was a Wednesday evening. I very clearly know that because I had just come from my radio show, and I had all my radio show things in my bag, my recorder and my thumb drives. And so I biked over to Gabor's in Amherst, and he pulled out his cargo bike. Well, one of his many cargo bikes. He's made quite a few, but the one that he pulled out for that night's adventures was this, he calls it a long nose. It's kind of like the long tail extra cycle kind of bikes, only it has a long, like a skateboard sort of platform front, a board front platform, and that he welded himself with an extended front wheel for steering. And he grabbed a pair of bolt cutters. So we went to UMass. It was Wednesday evening around 9 o'clock. And when we got to the dorms, this is Washington dorms, and there's all these bike racks all around the dorms. And there were so many bikes. And above every single bike rack was this big yellow sign that said, notice, with 4 exclamation marks, please remove your bicycle from all bike racks by May 16th. All, in capital letters, A-L-L, all bikes need to be removed. Any remaining bikes will be removed and stored for 90 days, then disposed of by facilities operations. This may mean cutting your lock, which you will not be reimbursed for. We are not responsible for bicycles that may be stolen prior to our removal. Yep, I took a picture of that sign, and I'm really glad I did because I needed that picture as evidence later. Anyway, so all the racks had those signs over them. Bikes got to be removed by the 16th. We went a week later on the 22nd. And I'm telling you, I was like a kid in a candy factory looking at all those bikes. There must have been 100 of them. So Gabor and I were, you know, just looking around, squeezing tires, making sure that you know, tires were underinflated or flat or low before we would take a bike. Making sure the chains were rusty because, you know, we're not going to take a bike that it seems like someone's using. We're not trying to steal bikes. We're just trying to salvage abandoned property before it gets more rusty and abandoned. And so, yeah, so, yeah, we clipped a few locks. We took a few bikes. And anyway, so Gabor, we were riding up Fearing Street, just right by the university, still on university property, or right on the edge of it. And Gabor, he's got two bikes laid crossways across the front of the platform of his cargo bike. And he's steering with one hand, balancing these two bikes, while he's ghost riding a third bike with his other hand. And I'm on my road bike, ghost riding another bike, or as the police report says, gliding another bike. I like that term, gliding. Yeah, we were gliding other bikes along. Anyway, well, we were having a great night. I mean, we were feeling good. I was thinking about my friends in Trinidad and which bike was going to go to who and how excited they'd be about it. And then we see these blue lights coming towards us, a couple of squad cars. And I was like, huh, I wonder what they're doing. It's a pretty quiet, calm night around UMass. And then they stop next to us. And then they're like, stop, stop, stop the bikes. And we're like, huh? What? Us? Why? And the first officer says, where'd you get those bikes? We heard that people were stealing bikes from the dorms. And we're like, well, yeah, we got them from the dorms because the sign said all bikes had to be removed by the 16th and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I need to see your ID. Get off the bikes. Anyway, so they're just like, put the bikes down. Anyway, so but I guess by that time we were, you know, we had set the bikes down. We just like, I just like dropped the bike. I was ghost riding. I was gliding and I leaned my bike against the sign pole. My headlight was still going and all that. So we stepped off the bikes and neither of us had ID. So, you know, we gave the first officer he was on me and the second officer was on Gabor. So we each gave them our names. They didn't really like that we didn't have ID, but it's not something that I usually travel with because I don't need it for anything. And Gabor, we're so close to home. Anyway, so I gave him my ID. He asked for my social security number. And at first I was like, I don't want to give that. I'm only legally required to give my name. And he said, well, we'll get it anyway. And he threatened to arrest me. And at that point, I was like, oh, yeah. And he also asked me if I was a citizen. They asked each of us if we were citizens. And I didn't actually know if Gabor was or not. He's originally from Hungary. But when he said yes, I was kind of glad to hear that. And usually when I'm asked if I'm a citizen, I say I'm not legally required to answer that. But in this case, I was like, well, I have kind of been caught red-handed. And the officer was threatening to arrest me. And I don't care about getting arrested or going to jail, whatever. But I'm thinking, uh-oh, if I get arrested, I'm not going to show up for work tomorrow. If I get arrested, it's more likely to show up in the police log. I could just see it in the Gazette. Pedal person arrested for larceny. Fifth Ward City Council candidate Alex Jarrett's housemate arrested for larceny. And I was like, I want this whole event to be as minuscule, as unnoticeable, as small a blip as possible in other people's lives and my coworkers' lives and all that. So when the officer said jump, I said, how high? Anyway, so we were, they asked us all these questions, like our parents' last names, our mother's maiden name, where we were born, all these things. And at one point, it was a little chilly. I was wearing a jacket and jeans. And at one point, I guess after we had given our names, the officer questioning me, he was, I don't know, checking for warrants or writing something down in his notepad. I'm not sure what. And so I stuck my hands in my jacket pocket and he was like, get your hands out of your pockets. I was like, oh, okay. And then like a few minutes later, I was like, you know, trying to stand, politely stand. And I put my hands behind my back, get your hands out from behind your back. I was like, sorry, I'm not used to protocol. And actually I wondered, I was like, oh, I wonder what kind of day this officer has had, or if he just came from a difficult call or stressful call, or I don't know workplace stress in general, being a police officer. But actually, I actually looked, fast forward a couple of weeks, I looked at the police log, the UMass Amherst police log for May, and on the log, the May log, our stop, their stopping of us on that day, on May 22nd, that was the only incident listed for that day. The other interesting thing that I noticed when I looked back at the police log for the month of May was, I'm guessing maybe like half of the, so there was an incident report, I guess that's the right name, like maybe one a day, one every other day, maybe two on some days, not very many. And of them, a good portion were for larceny. And of those larceny cases for the month of May, ours was the only one where they caught someone red-handed. And that was because one of the dorm advisors, resident advisors or something like that, yeah, she had called the police and said, and told them that there are people taking bikes and they don't appear to be official. Which made me and Gabor think, oh, maybe next time we'll wear vests. But I don't think Gabor's cargo bike is going to look official no matter what we're wearing. Anyway, so then the police, there, we got all our information that night of May 22nd. And then I wasn't sure if they had seen the bolt cutters yet, because they were sort of strapped to the underside of Gabor's bike. And so then a third officer came in a truck. They called a third officer with a truck to come take the bikes, the four bikes we had on us, to take those bikes away. And when that officer came, and he was going to unbungee the bikes that were on Gabor's cargo bike, and I'm looking at his bike, and I'm looking at where I know those bolt cutters are stashed, and I was like, do you want help unstrapping those? And they're like, oh, no, we can do it. And so, they jostled his bike to get the other bikes off, and the bolt cutters fell out, and the officer picked them up, and he was like, this is going to be an additional charge. You're never going to see these again. Anyway, so then they were, the officers were like, okay, I should clarify that there were three officers here, and I can't exactly, when I say they were three distinct different personalities, and I'm not, and I use the term they broadly, and maybe I should just say one of them. So then one of them was like, so the bikes that you were riding, where'd you get those bikes? And we're like, oh, well, they're ours. Well, but where did you get them? And Gabor said, well, I made this one. You can see it's a homemade bike. And the officer said, yeah, but where did you get the parts? And Gabor said, well, I bought them from Parker at Laughing Dog about 10 years ago. Well, do you have the receipt? No. Well, do you know the serial number? No, because I welded over it, Gabor said. Then they asked me about my bike. Like, I know, how can you prove that this is your bike? And I'm like, well, I can tell you all these things about it, how I replaced the front wheel. It doesn't match the back wheel. I can tell you everything that's in it. And he's like, well, what stickers are on it? And I'm like, I don't know. I think I have a one less car sticker on that one, but I don't know if that's on my other bike or this bike. Anyway, I just couldn't stop talking. I know they say anything you say can and will be used against you, but I couldn't stop talking. I think partly that naive part of me that thinks, but surely if I talk more and I'm honest, the chances of human connection are increased. Perhaps maybe not in this legal sense, perhaps not in this interaction, or perhaps not in the court case, but maybe there's going to be some benefit to humanity. Surely. Anyway, so they asked, I talked. The officer was like, well, how do we know you didn't steal a bike last year or 5 years ago? Anyway, so then the officers decided to take our bikes, and the officer who walked them away, who had come in the truck, as he was taking our bikes away, he was kind of like, well, and I know that these are your bikes, but you're going to have to prove that to the judge. And besides, maybe this will be a motivation for you to show up in court so you can get your bikes back. And they put our bikes in the back of the truck, headlights still running and everything. Oh, yeah. The other thing the first officer asked me when he was asking me for my name and address and social security number and mother's maiden name and all those things, he asked me, when I gave him my address, he said, "Is this your real address?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "This is where you receive mail?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "So if I mail you a citation to show up in court at this address, you'll receive it." I said, "Yeah." Oh, and then we also got trespassed on the spot. They pulled out their 2-year trespass notices and read them to us and asked us to sign them and said, "You don't have to sign them. It doesn't make any difference." So I'm not, we signed them because, like I said, they said jump. I said, "How high?" And I don't know why you would, they would ask us to sign them if it doesn't make any difference one way or the other. Anyway, so then, yep, they took all the bikes, and the bolt cutters, the four we had on us, our two bikes, and then Gabor and I were, we walked back to his house with our helmets on in the dark, and we were a little rattled, you know, my knees were a little jiggly, I had a little bit of a adrenaline, the whole power dynamic, you know, when you feel like you're seen as less than human, and you know that whatever you say, there's no reasoning. It's just what you did was wrong. I'm telling you, it was the crime of the century. And when we were walking back to Gabor's house, Gabor says, "Society is collapsing, and this is what it's come to." And we both laughed a little bit. And then we went back to his house and had a homemade beer and decompressed a little bit. And, well, you're listening to Valley Free Radio. This is Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I'm telling a story that of my little bike absconsion situation from the last 2 months that I've been... Well, this happened on May 22nd, 2019, this little story I'm telling. And I got more to tell about how it all wound up. Yeah, here, okay, I'll play a little song and then come back with more.
Where we come from and will we go back to where we belong?
Welcome back to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That was Desiree with Gracious Mama Africa. I'm going to continue the story I was telling about my bike absconding case. So right before the song, I was said Gabor and I. So after the police, the UMass police stopped us and took the bikes we had and took our bikes, we walked back to his house. And I also want to say that like I totally recognize like my white privilege and class privilege and all the privileges I had like to even risk like going to the university with a pair of bolt cutters and taking some bikes. It was pretty brazen, the sort of sense of impunity or immunity or something like that. Like even though I completely, you know, believe that the bikes were abandoned and not wanted, still it was some sense of entitlement, I guess. And also I recognize that, you know, if I'd been a brown-skinned person and the police had stopped us, I'm pretty sure I would have been arrested and they wouldn't have just let us go and promised to mail us a citation to show up in court. Anyway, so Gabor and I hung out that night a little bit and then I biked back. He lent me a bike to bike back to Northampton, to Florence, to my house at like midnight, 1 a.m. And when I got on the bike and I left his house, I was still pretty rattled after the interaction with the police. And when I biked through Amherst College property, like by the lacrosse fields or the athletic fields towards the bike path, like there was a car, an SUV on my left that was sort of coming to a stop and just sort of waiting for me to pass through the beam of its headlights. And I realized it was at Amherst College campus police, and I was like, "Doh!" And then when I got to where the bike path was and I grabbed the bike and scuttled down the embankment to the bike path, I was so happy for the safety and the darkness of the path. And then I biked back to Florence. Well, actually, when I got to Northampton, I crossed King Street on the bike path, and there was a SUV car coming down King Street that I had to cross in front of the path of the headlights, and it was Northampton police. And I was like, "Oh, just get me back to the bike path and the safety." It was really nice to have like a hour-long bike ride after this like stressful event. And then when I got home, I was just like, I had no idea what my future would hold, these charges, and is everybody going to know or just hear the police side of things? So my friend Johanna Albison, who is involved with the station, she used to be a children's librarian, and she's been lending me some kids' books. And so one of the books that she has lent me recently is about a boy who returns to his, who goes and visits his grandparents in Trinidad and Tobago. And so that night when I got home, I hadn't read that book yet, so I just opened it up and started looking at the pictures and reading the book, and the pictures were so evocative of my trip to Trinidad. And I just like started bawling because I'm thinking about how, you know, so the reason that we took the bikes was for this project that I wanted to ship these bikes to Trinidad. And this sort of this, you know, the love I felt, the connection I felt to this place and people that sort of triggered this whole sequence of events. Anyway, then, to be honest, I had another beer and I fell asleep. I'm not really much of a drinker, but I'm telling you, the beer came in really helpful at that time. And when I got up the next morning, I was still feeling pretty stressed because I had only gotten like 3 hours of sleep and all that. And one of my housemates came downstairs and I was like, And I told Clarissa, I was like, oh, yeah, Gabor, and I got trespassed from UMass last night. She was like, really? What happened? And I was like, well, we were cutting some locks. And I told her a little bit. And she was like, ooh. And then I told another housemate. But then I felt like, I really didn't want to tell anyone because I have no idea how people are going to react and what judgments they have. And I feel too vulnerable in this at this time to deal with any judgments. So I'm just not going to tell anybody. But all day that day when I was doing my pedal people route, I was riding around and thinking, oh, do people know? Do people know of that like I was detained for stealing bikes last night? What are people going to think? And in my mind, I'm like writing my manifesto defense if only the police side of the story comes out. And I'm thinking, that maybe that wasn't my best judgment. And what if I actually did steal a bike that someone wanted? And I started to feel bad about that. And I was like, well, they can always come to the bike lab for another one. And by the afternoon of that day, I suddenly realized, you know what? I'm not sorry for what I did. I'm just sorry I got caught, like a true criminal. But anyway, I still didn't tell very many people. That was like Thursday. And then a couple days later, that weekend, I went to Boston to help at a Bikes Not Bombs container loading day. And as I was helping load the container, one of the other guys there, we were just, you know, making small talk. And he says to me, so how many bikes do you have? And I said, well, normally I have two, but at this time I only have one because the other one is in police custody. And he said, oh, well, what happened? And so I told him, having no idea how he would react or what kind of judgments he might have. And he said, I want a picture with you. You're my hero. You risked arrest to liberate these bikes and send them to a place where they're needed. And I told him, ah, man, that's the best thing I've heard all week. So this all happened like May 22nd, and I've told of like part of the following week. So then on June 13th, I think, was when Gabor and I received the citation in the mail. That was when we saw what the charges actually were against us. And yeah, I got this piece of paper that with lots of big capital letters, notice of magistrate's hearing on complaint application, UMass Police Department versus Ruth Woodring. The offense description, larceny over $1,200 by single scheme, receiving stolen property over $1,200, all in big capital letters. Yeah, I got a little nervous. Gabor had an additional charge. I think it was something like theft with a burglarious tool. That was the bowl cutters. So fortunately, some of my privilege playing out here, I have a friend who's a lawyer, Luke Ryan. Luke Ryan's a great guy. I really appreciate him. I've known him since before he became a lawyer, because he was friends with a housemate of mine. And he had told me in the past, well, when he became a lawyer, he was like, hey, if you ever need any legal help, let me know. So I decided this was the time to cash in. Yep, Luke, I need some legal help. I got these felony larceny charges I'm looking at. I kind of felt like I wanted to represent myself, because the charges seemed pretty minor. They sounded big, like felony, but I really didn't think it was very likely that they would actually charge us with the felony. So here's the other thing. We were being charged, I'll get to this part in a minute. Anyway, so I asked Luke for advice, and he said, well, the first thing you should do is call district court. This is all out of Eastern District Court in Belchertown. He said, call the clerk's office and have them send you a copy of the statement of facts, the charges against you. And so I called the Belchertown clerk's office and introduced myself and asked for a statement of facts. And the clerk said, you'll get those on the day of your hearing. So I called Luke again And he said, and I said, they said I'll get them the day of my hearing. And he said, then no, you are entitled to see those sooner. And so he, you know, had someone in his office look up in the books, and then he got back with me later that day, and he said, you know, Section 502, page 67 of the Massachusetts Best Practices for District Court says that the accused is entitled to see a copy of the file or the charges against them. So he said, call the court back and tell them. And so I called the court back, the clerk's office again, and this time, I mean, I just asked for the same thing. I just asked, you know, to see a copy of the charges against me. I just asked to see a statement of facts. And this time they said, okay, come by with an ID and you can get those. And I said, great, I'll be there. Yeah, it's hard if you represent yourself to know what the rules are, you know. It's really hard. And if your rights are not, you know, violated, you don't even know what to fight for. So I'm really grateful I had some legal advice. Anyway, so then I went to Belchertown. I biked out there, and I picked up a copy of the Statement of Facts and saw that we were being charged with stealing four bikes that we had taken from UMass, as well as our own two bikes that they had seized from us. So in Massachusetts, $1,200 is a division between a misdemeanor and a felony. And they were charging us with stealing a total of $1,400 worth of property. So the fact that they were charging us with stealing our own bikes allowed them to push the charges from misdemeanor category up into felony category. All right, so another thing that I did that Luke recommended I do was get a copy of the police report from UMass. So I filed a public records request from UMass to get a copy of the police report. And they have 10 days to fill that request. And I received that copy. It was emailed to me on day 10 of the 10 days, which was the day before our hearing, which was July 12th. Meanwhile, so in the last couple of weeks of June, first couple of weeks of July, Gabor and I are preparing our case. We're preparing our statement. We're getting our documents together. We're getting a copy of the sign that said, posted above all the bike racks saying the bikes had to be removed by such and such a date. Anyway, so then when I get the day before the case, we were still planning on representing ourselves. Luke had offered to represent us, but I was kind of like, I don't know. I kind of feel like it will be more, I'll feel more empowered if I try to represent myself. And then also I kind of felt like, no, Luke does, he's got a lot of bigger fish to fry. I don't want to, like, take up his time on this little dinky case. Anyway, but then the day before the hearing, when I got a copy of the police report and read them, listed on the stolen property was not only the four bikes we had on us and our two bikes, but also listed under stolen property was my ATM card and $96 cash I had in my backpack that they took that was in my bike. And yeah, it was just listed as stolen property. And so at that point, I was like, oh, shoot, like if they can charge us with that, who knows what they're going to do. And so then I emailed Luke and I was like, Luke, are you still available tomorrow afternoon, Belchertown, 2:00? And he said, yep, I'll be there. Whew. And I can't tell you how relieved I was to know that I would have some legal representation, that to know that I had backup and someone who knows the system and would advocate for us. And anyway, yeah, so we had our little court date on July 12th. Gabor and our friend Moss biked out to Belchertown together. And Gabor and I had our statements we were prepared to read in our defense that we had prepared expecting to represent ourselves. And some other supporters of Gabor's and mine met us out there. Misty and Paige and Bob and Marianne and some other people. And I'm probably forgetting some people. Sorry. So we get to the courthouse and Luke had asked us, do you want me to try and sort of settle things out of court if they're willing? And we said, sure. So he talked with the UMass police representative and he talked with the magistrate. And then he came back to us and he said, they seem intent on pushing forward with the charges. And we said, okay, well, let's go on in. So we went in. Our supporters weren't allowed to come in, which I was actually fine with. I was so glad that they were there. Just really nice to know they were there. But actually, to actually be in the courtroom, I was totally fine. It just being me and Gabor and Luke behind one table, and then the police sergeant, UMass police sergeant representative behind the other table, and then the magistrate behind the bench. So we get sworn in, and then the magistrate says something like, so we all basically agree on the facts of the case, that you all took the bikes. We're here today just to decide if this is a misdemeanor or a felony. And Luke said, well, my clients have some statements that they've prepared that they'd like to share. And so Luke said, well, who wants to go first? And I was like, oh, okay, I will. I wanted to go first, actually. And so I asked the magistrate, I was like, should I stand up or sit down? Because I was seated at that point. And he said, either way. So I stood up and I was like, I want to stand up because I'll feel more powerful that way. So I read my statement. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to read my statement. Now, I have to tell you, I wrote this statement preparing to defend myself, and the advice given to me by the lawyer was, you got to really tell how great you are. You can't be shy. You got to say all the great things you do, and that's just what you got to do, even if it, you know, if it offends your humility. You just got to do it, he said. I was like, okay, I can do that. All right, so this is my statement that I read to the Eastern Hampshire District Court Clerk Magistrate and also to the police sergeant representative, which he was actually sitting at his desk looking down at his papers the whole time, so I really had no idea if he, you know, how it was striking him. I'd like to share my excitement about bikes with you. I want every bike to be a wanted bike, a used bike, because I believe in the power of the bicycle to change the world. If all the bikes in the United States were in use, the land and people would be healthy. But they're not. Too many sit abandoned in garages and bike racks. Well, there are a few fewer at the UMass bike racks, though they're now probably sitting unused in a police warehouse. They were on their way to Trinidad before they got intercepted on Fearing Street. I spent the winter working on a farm in Trinidad, and people there told me, I'd love to have a bike, but they're hard to come by here, and they're expensive. Well, I said, I know of hundreds of unused bikes in western Massachusetts. And I gave the magistrate a copy of my GoFundMe page for the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project. In fact, on the same day I absconded, that's police words, on the same day I absconded with bicycles from UMass, I found out that I had won a Springfield police bike auction of 68 bikes for $888. That's $13 per bike, a lot less than the alleged value of $1,400 for 6 bikes, 2 of which were mine and Gabor's. When Gabor and I took bikes from the UMass racks, we chose ones that looked like they hadn't been ridden in a while. Rusty chains, underinflated tires. We didn't take any bikes that looked like they were being used. Our whole purpose is to get bikes in use. As you can see in exhibit number 3, the sign posted above all the bike racks outside Washington dorms said, notice, please remove your bicycle from all bike racks by May 16th. All bikes need to be removed. We came on May 22nd. The sign also said, any remaining bikes will be removed and stored for 90 days, then disposed of by facilities operations. This may mean cutting your lock, which you will not be reimbursed for. We are not responsible for bicycles that may be stolen prior to our removal. It seemed to us that people who wanted their bike had the opportunity, or rather the directive, to remove it. As a trash hauler and scavenger, I've seen so many bikes sit around and get rustier and rustier until they're barely salvageable. I had actually called the UMass police around the 10th of May to ask about what happened to the bikes that students left behind at the end of the semester, if there was a bike auction or if they ever donated them. I was told to call back and talk to another officer another day. To my discredit, I did not follow up on that discussion. a few days later, when I heard that the deadline had passed for students to remove their bikes, I was concerned that the bikes would be seized by facilities operations and disposed of before I found my way through the bureaucracy. And I asked myself, who were we allegedly stealing from? And how much money would UMass have made from these bikes? Or would it cost them more to cut locks, transport them, store them, etc., than they would make? The language on the sign suggested to me that facilities operations didn't really want to deal with them. I had stopped by the Smith College campus police headquarters the week before, that would have been the second week of May, and talked with an officer there about their abandoned bikes, and they said they had just given about 70 bikes to Bob the Bike Guy in Springfield. So thinking about Smith giving them away, and Springfield Police Department bikes going to the highest bidder, which was me, at $13 per bike, it didn't seem to me that taking seemingly abandoned property from UMass before the official channels had to deal with it was causing hardship for anyone. I love bikes. I've never owned a car. I've chosen to not have a driver's license. I make a living riding a bike and hauling trash. If people need bike help, bike parts, or bikes, they ask me. That's what I do. I connect people and bikes so people have transportation choices free of fossil fuels that allow them to breathe in life and strength as they propel themselves through the land. Almost every Saturday for the past 15 years, I've run the Bike Lab, which is a free bike repair workshop space where people can learn to fix their bike. Sometimes people can get a bike there for a sliding scale or barter. I've provided bikes and bike support for people coming from refugee camps in Rwanda, the Congo, Eritrea, for veterans, for people living in tents and shelters in Northampton and Amherst, for valley farm workers, restaurant workers, trash haulers, foster families, doctors, and lawyers, oh, and UMass students. Everyone and every bike is welcome at the Bike Lab. A friend told me last night, when I think of bikes in the Pioneer Valley, I think of you. I teach bike safety, I teach bike repair, I'm a co-owner of Pedal People Cooperative, a bike trash hauling business in Northampton. I'm on the Northampton Bike Ped Committee, I collect bikes for Bikes Not Bombs overseas projects, and I sell the public bike repair station outside my house, I help organize bike breakfast, I pick up trash on the rail trip, blah, 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 blah. And I always carry my patch kit so I can help someone when they get a flat tire. Except not now, because now my patch kit and pump and personal belongings are with my bicycle in the custody of UMass campus police. When the police stopped Gabor and me and took the four UMass bikes we were transporting, they also took our two bikes that we were riding on. They told us we'd have to prove to the judge that they're ours. Exhibit number 5 is a picture of my blue 1986 Fuji Palisade 10-speed bike in front of the ancient sycamore tree in Sunderland. I bought that bike from the late Andrew Bzdell at 19 Hatfield Street in Northampton for $25 around 2006. I realized that using bolt cutters was pretty brazen. I'm usually not that bold. I understand that these bikes were on university property, that I had no legal right to them. And what if everyone decided they could cut locks anytime they wanted because they felt they had a higher purpose? So I don't necessarily expect you to agree with me that my actions were justified. But if the point of legal consequences is deterrence, consider me deterred, because this whole process is a really hard way to rustle up a few bikes. I'm trespassed from UMass for 2 years, and I'm not planning any return visits. Thanks for listening to my perspective, and if you ever need bike help, please come by the Bike Lab. Sincerely, Ruth Woodring. So, that was my statement that I read to the magistrate judge at the Eastern Hampshire District Court clerk in defense of my felony larceny charges on July 12th. And then Gabor read his statement. And then the magistrate looked at our documents and pictures and exhibits. And he said, I'm not going to issue this complaint. I can see that you're well-meaning people. Maybe you just went about it the wrong way. But I'm going to continue it without a finding for 6 months. And you'll need to pay $250 in restitution and $40 in court costs. How does that, and he said to our lawyer, how does that sound to your clients? And Luke turned to us and he said, what do you think, $290 and get your bikes back? And we said, okay. So that was that. Thanks to Gob War for paying my fine already. And I had some other financial support from people. And so the police sergeant, then he said, I would recommend that you appeal the trespass notice. That's a thing that people do. There's a number on the form. Call that number. You can appeal it. It shouldn't be that hard. And the magistrate said, I second that recommendation. You should do that because you never know in Amherst where UMass property is, and you don't want to be on it not knowing with a trespass order. And then also towards the end of it, I asked the police sergeant, I was like, so given my situation, the legal case and all, like, is it okay to ask UMass police? So like, what does happen with those bikes? And he said, I'm sure you can talk to us. And then the other thing that happened right before we left was the magistrate said to Luke Ryan, our lawyer, he was like, so Luke, did you help your clients write those statements? And Luke said, no, that was all them. And the magistrate said something like, well, that was very fine work. Good job. And then we left quite happy. So that's most of the story. Yep, so finally got my bike back last week, all my things back. And then yesterday, or day before yesterday, I called UMass. Yeah, it was a couple days ago. I called UMass Police Department and asked them. I said, oh, so my name is Ruthie Woodring. I didn't know if they would recognize my name or not. And I said, and I'm trying to get some bikes together for a project to ship some bikes to Trinidad. And I was wondering what happens to your all's bikes at the end of the semester. And the officer said, oh, well, we don't cut those locks. That's facilities. You should talk to someone in grounds department. And then he said, but I can tell you, by the time they cut those locks, they've got seats missing, wheels stolen. They're pretty rusty. They're probably not even worth your money to ship. And of course, I'm thinking, those are the same bikes that we just got charged felony charges with that you said were worth $200 to $400 a piece. Anyway, thanks for listening to my story. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I hope I didn't put anyone to sleep. I love bikes. So I got some announcements. Gotta make some exciting things coming up this weekend. Of course, the bike lab.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
All right, also coming up this weekend is the 6th annual Pocumptuck Homelands Festival in Great Falls. Some people also know Great Falls as Turner's Falls, the name of the general that massacred a bunch of Indians. I don't think I said that quite right. So this is Saturday, August 3rd and Sunday, August 4th. You can find a schedule online at turnersfallsriverculture.org or also go to the Nolan Becca Project. They're organizing this. So it is, where is it? At Unity Park in Great Falls from 10 a.m. Saturday. There's storytelling, drums, arts, crafts, kids programs, talks, Hawk Henry's is going to be playing flute. New this year, witness the carving of a dugout canoe from a green white pine log with traditional fire carving and scraping by a team from the Aquanaw Wampanoag. Vendors, educators, authors, archaeologists, ceremonial stones, expert, demonstration of Northeast woodland skills, Native American food vendors, etc. This weekend, the Pecumtuk Homelands Festival in Great Falls. Also coming up, let's see, tomorrow, Thursday, is the Western Mass Surge meeting. Surge stands for Showing Up for Racial Justice. And that meeting, the general meeting, is from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Northampton Friends Meeting House. There's food and childcare available. Maybe it's probably a potluck. They usually do that. Also, coming up, what do we have? Oh, I know what else I wanted to say. So, yesterday, I went with a busload of people from the Pioneer Valley Workers Center to Boston for a lobby day to the State House to encourage our legislators to support the Work and Family Mobility Act. This would allow all qualified residents in the state to apply for a standard driver's license, irrespective of their immigration status. So I encourage people to contact their legislators, especially if they're maybe unsupportive. I think most of the Western Mass legislators are supportive. I know like Joe Comerford and Lindsay Sabadosa are very supportive. Also, the Safe Communities Act, that needs pushed through the state of Massachusetts too. Contact your legislators about the Safe Communities Act. All right. Well, thanks for listening to Out There Today. And Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and I hope you have a great steamy summer day. Oh no, I think it cooled off with the rain, didn't it? All right.